12:33. ABC Newcastle.
When was the last time you went to the library? Maybe you're a loyal patron, dutifully returning their books when they're overdue. Maybe you've moved towards e-books, though, and you see libraries as cemeteries for those old things made out of paper. This year is the National Year of Reading, and across Australia, book lovers have been celebrating but also contemplating a future full of change. So what's the outlook for libraries across the world? Marcus Barber is a strategic futurist and director of Looking Up Feeling Good. He's been looking into just this very issue. Morning, Marcus.
Good morning, Jenny. How are you going?
I'm good, but this is interesting, the idea of what the library of the future might be like, because they have changed quite a lot already, I would say, in the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, indeed. And that was the subject of the recent conference, the Public Libraries New South Wales conference up there at Port Stephens. And the range of discussions about how libraries are evolving was absolutely fantastic. So there's certainly some changes underway and some ongoing changes that are going to continue.
So will we walk into the library one day and just all plug in our e-readers and download something? How would it work?
Yeah, I think that's already happening, and we're seeing a much greater evolution of what is the traditional format of a book into the digital readership model. There is some reluctance in some libraries. Certainly local councils that run their libraries look at the cost factor of providing a digital sort of format for some of their constituents. So that's a struggle. But by and large, I think you're going to see a shift towards an addition of digital readers as opposed to just moving solely to digital readers.
Right. So an option where you could come in and download something onto your own device?
Yeah, that's right. And that's really about shifting towards the preference of your consumer. So if we treat the average person who walks into a library or might utilise library services as a consumer of information and books, then what you then realise that some generations are growing up beyond the concept of the standard format of a paper book, and you need to provide for them as well.
I guess if that goes, if that becomes the way that libraries go in terms of downloads, well, there's no need any longer then, is there, for a physical library? It could all be done online.
Yeah, no, I don't actually buy into that, even though it is a theme that exists about the fact that you could get away with the physical space of a library. I don't think that actually looks at what a library is about.
Right.
And some people think libraries are repositories to store books in. And that really, for me, functionally misses the point of why a library exists. And for me, it's about the idea of knowledge. So bringing people together in a shared space is one of those elements that libraries provide really well, of which their main theme is circulated around the concept of the book. But we're evolving well beyond that now.
Yeah, I know my local library, I should say, has children's reading groups. It has baby kind of play groups. It has the toy library, lots of elements there for children. But then some of the bigger libraries in our area, I'm thinking particularly of Wall's End and Newcastle libraries, have art exhibitions and lots of different activities, competitions, workshops, speeches, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and for me, that's the central hub of what a library is really about. Those people that think libraries are books sort of limit the value they provide. In the presentation I made at the conference, I was talking about the idea of libraries as knowledge centres, and that if you start talking about them as a knowledge centre and knowledge in all its formats, then you extend both the value to the community in which a library is based, but also you put a greater emphasis on what type of services a library might provide. And that's where you start getting some very interesting additional formats that knowledge takes.
So what are some of the elements that we might not have thought of? I mean, when I think about the future of books and reading, I go straight to the e-readers. But what are some of the other elements that you could see in a library of the future?
Well, one of the most interesting ones that I'm seeing now is 3D printers, what some people know as rapid prototyping or in-home manufacture. And a 3D printer is effectively, for most of your listeners will probably know, it's like a large inkjet printer, but instead of printing out on a sheet of paper, it actually layers up a 3D product, if you like. You can print out toys or some sort of format. So there's a library in the Sunshine Coast that's just installed a 3D printer that people can come and use and experiment with them. There are products like a MakerBot, which people can have in home. There's museums in the United States that now enable some of their attendees to be able to download a digital image of a sculpture and then print it out in 3D format. Now, when libraries think about the concept of them being there for knowledge and extending knowledge, you bring a 3D printer into the library space and allow people to start experimenting with things that they've made at home in their own digital formats, but then want to print out a real version of it. And that really extends the value of libraries and the type of services they might provide.
Wow. So printing out a 3D object, going down to the library and doing that, perhaps like in the olden days where you used to go down and use the internet for 20 minutes or something down at the library.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you would hire the 3D space. That extends then into the value of technology meeting the library, if you like. So we embrace the concept of how do we use the digital space that we have now and add a knowledge scheme that's beyond the concept of the book. So 3D printers making products or physical artifacts becomes one. There are tech workshop formats where you can bring people into a space and they have access to a whole range of tools, almost like if you think of the idea of a men's shed but applied to a technology format for people who might otherwise attend a library. Mm. Now you provide a range of assets that say, oh, I want to experiment with that particular piece of technology. I don't really want to buy it myself. Where else will I get access to it? Oh, I'm pretty sure the library's got a spot. So you can go down and experiment with different pieces of technology to learn how it might benefit you in your life or develop your passion for it.
When you talk about that, it reminds me of a space that exists already, which I won't go into too deeply because it is a shop. It's a commercial thing. But one of the big technology businesses out there now have shops where people can go in, talk to people about the technology that's there. They sit and using computers and tablets and products. They get little individual workshops even. And that is happening in shops now. So you're talking about that kind of environment where people could come, use technology, learn, but in a non-commercial environment.
Yeah, and I think that's the main difference. To a large extent, libraries are non-commercial entities. I don't necessarily know if they need to be non-commercial. They just have grown up in that particular format. But as opposed to getting someone into a particular brand of store where the purpose ultimately is to not only teach them about that product but encourage them to buy that product, here you would allow people in the library space to utilise certain pieces of technology and understand how they fit and whether they're useful. And if they want to then go and buy, they can have that own initiative themselves to find a commercial entity that will do that for them.
How do librarians feel about all this, Marcus?
Well, there's certainly a great deal of debate that libraries will and are desirous of sort of developing the type of approach they have for consumers now and users of the services. It sounds like, and listening to a lot of the people that spoke at the conference, the main challenge seems to be from, how shall we put this, the powers that be that might otherwise fund library services that are reluctant to enable that next level of development for libraries. So whilst you have a traditional theme of, yes, we grow up and we provide books for people to read, a lot of the librarians also understand and appreciate the need to evolve into other formats, but they're getting a lot of resistance from their funding partners, if you like, is one way to put it. And that's creating challenges about the type of technology and other skills and assets they can provide to users.
There is always that challenge, isn't there, around change of resistance and, well, but this is the way we've always done it, so why not keep doing it that way? But the whole challenge with technology, Marcus, is that people like yourself are, of course, looking to the future and being strategic about what might happen. But for many of us, I just can't imagine. I sometimes say to my husband, well, you know, when we've got teenage children, maybe they'll just watch TV on their phones. We won't need to have TVs in the house. And then I think, well, they'll probably think our phones like we use now are ancient. It's just so hard to know where technology is going to go.
Yeah. I think you're right there, Jenny. And in 2004, I did a series with National Geographic Channel called Future Matters. And one of the things I made, the observation I made then is the phone is already old. We need to think beyond the concept of the phone and talk about, you know, an electronic access point and wearable electronics. So it is likely that kids will basically wearing all of their electronics that they need and gain access where and where they want. So Whether they're watching TV becomes a challenge because really a lot of them are heading towards self-generated content or content from made from within our own cohort, which means they go to the internet, certain internet service providers and areas that they watch the type of content they prefer. They're still going to watch TV in different formats. They're still going to watch it at home on the big screen, as you and I will as well. And we have to be careful about thinking just because the digital book has arrived that that means the end of all books. That's the type of techno-mythology that often gets pushed at us for when a new technology arrives. And as a futurist, my job is to say, okay, that's interesting. That doesn't mean it will be. You know, how might it imply it? How might the consumers, the general population, use this technology? So digital books, I think, are a great format. Personally, I have a preference for sitting down and holding what feels and smells like a real book. And most of us will be like that for quite some time. The digital format, one of the great advantages I see is for kids not having to carry 35,000 different textbooks in their backpacks. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's its greatest asset because they're digital savvy. It is smart usage. We have to get to the pricing model, which is still horrendously high given what the format is. But that's just that's a different issue.
Mm. Marcus, I recently went to an e-reader and was pushed in that direction after going on an overseas trip and packing some paperbacks and then thinking, I don't want to carry all this to the other side of the world. I just want one little device that's going to do it for me. Yet there are some books that you want to have in hard copy still, certainly.
Mm. Yeah, indeed. And I have a preference for writing in books. So when I read things, I tend to write notes in the sidelines and highlight certain elements that I want to go back to and read again. And for me, that's the only information issue that if I want to go back and quickly do a refresh, or I can just read the stuff that I've highlighted fairly quickly and know, okay, that I've got that whole book again. But we're getting better in terms of digital formats as well, in terms of allowing the reader to maintain some sort of ownership by adding their own comments in the book. The challenge I find with the digital readership really comes down to how we enable transactions, the real purchasing process, to take place for ownership of that book and the limited value of digital rights. And this is probably one area that the libraries have a real great asset in. They tend to be less restricted in terms of the type of books they can carry. They still have budgetary constraints.
Yes.
But they enable the everyday person in the street to wander in and say, do you have a copy of this book? Before I really want to buy it, can I actually just read it first and see if it's the type of book I like? And that's an asset that's a lot harder to find.
Wow, Marcus, such a fascinating conversation and to spend some time picking your brain about all kinds of interesting topics around books. I'd love to catch up another time. Thank you very much.
No worries, Jenny. Cheers.
Bye. Marcus Barber there, who's strategic futurist. Fascinating line of work. Director of Looking Up, Feeling Good.
12, 12, 12:33. ABC Newcastle.